This is Brendan Lyons, state editor with the Times Union. Welcome to a special episode of the Capital Confidential podcast. As the coronavirus pandemic has engulfed the world, the state of New York has emerged as the United States' front line in the battle against the infectious disease. Dr. Howard Zucker, commissioner of the state health department, has been one of the key people steering New York's handling of the crisis. As a Bronx native, Dr. Zucker graduated from George Washington University Medical School at age 22, becoming one of America's youngest doctors. He is board certified in six specialties and received training in pediatrics at Johns Hopkins Hospital, anesthesiology at the University of Pennsylvania, pediatric critical care medicine at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and pediatric cardiology at Children's Hospital at Harvard Medical School. In short, New York's health commissioner, who joined the agency in 2013, is a highly trained medical professional and tasked with leading the state's effort to understand, contain, treat, and battle the virus. In this interview with the Times Union, Dr. Zucker helps differentiate fact from fiction and provides his informed insight on the infectious disease that has forever changed New York and the world. Please note, portions of the audio are choppy due to our connection, but given Dr. Zucker's round-the-clock schedule as commissioner, we were only able to secure this interview by telephone. Okay, this is Brendan Lyons. I'm the state editor with the Times Union. I'm on the phone today with Dr. Howard Zucker, who is the commissioner of the New York State Health Department. It's Monday, March 23rd, and Dr. Zucker, you are in the midst of a war against the coronavirus. And how is the state health department faring right now? How is your resources and your ability, do you think, to continue battling this?
So we are tackling this from all fronts. We have literally hundreds of people working on this issue right across every part of the department and obviously right across all aspects of the entire government. And the governor has charged the entire team with tackling this and being creative and innovative and how best to identify what we need to do for hospitals, what we need to do for the people in the community, testing and new therapies, whatever we can do, and we're doing it, and we're partnering with everyone.
Fantastic. And so we wanted to pose a few questions to you that we think the general public has. There's a lot, as you know, a lot of misinformation out there, misunderstanding, too, of what's going on. So what are the most common ways that you know of that disease, that the infectious disease is being transmitted right now?
Sure. So the first thing is that this is a respiratory illness. It's contagious, infectious disease. It's a new virus. We have not seen this before. It is transmitted by respiratory droplets. So if you're coughing or sneezing, the virus sort of lands on a surface and someone touches that surface, they may be able to transmit it that way, no differently than other viruses, which is why we urge people to wash their hands, to sneeze into their sleeve, and to use good public health hygiene.
How is COVID-19 different from the swine flu?
So the issue is that COVID-19 is something new that has surfaced. A lot of flus in general are made up of different components as an agent and component, and when you have flu, you sometimes have been exposed to other parts of that flu virus in the past. So with the COVID-19, this is something which basically has entered into the environment, into the biological milieu, and the body has no immunity initially to it, and that's why we have seen so many infections and people are fighting it off and looking to try to figure out how to rev up the immune system, help the immune system to battle this new virus.
Are there certain foods that people can consume at this time and other measures they can take to help boost their immunity?
So that's a great question about how you can boost your immunity. At the end of the day, the best thing to do is to eat a very healthy diet, good fruits and vegetables, like we always say, also to get a good night's sleep and rest and to sort of pace yourself. I think that works in many ways. Everyone sort of knows that after, if you're tired, you're a little run down, you sleep eight hours, you wake up feeling refreshed, and I strongly urge people to do that. And it goes back to the other thing, the other issue that you mentioned before, which is what are some of the good public health practices? So if you're washing your hands and you're not exposed to other people who are ill, that will also help avoid the spread of the disease and will keep you healthy.
Are government and the public overreacting? There's some people out there who seem to think this is much ado for nothing. Do you think that's the case?
Right, not at all. And I know I've heard people say, well, maybe we're doing too much. But in actual fact, when you have something that's new, that's novel, that's not seen before, it is more important to be aggressive, to get out there and to try to get ahead of this issue than to end up playing catch up. And so we are being very aggressive on this. We have seen what has happened overseas. Given that we have the knowledge of other countries from Asia and from Europe, we don't need to repeat errors, and we should learn from that. And that's why we've been extremely aggressive here in New York, and the government has been at the forefront of this, trying to figure out how to make sure that we don't get caught without the necessary resources that we will need to fight this.
I understand. And you see, when you go out in the public now, you see a mix. You see people with no gloves. Other people are wearing latex gloves. Some people have opted to wear masks. Can you talk a little bit about any safety measures like those that people should be taking in public, as well as social distancing within a household? Is that possible, or is that something that maybe isn't necessary for people within the same household?
So I think that brings up the issue of what's the most important thing to do. And at this point is stay home. Stay home. I mean, if you have to go out, stay 6 feet apart from individuals. And I know this is hard. It's just not our natural way of operating. But stay home. If you're around someone who's sick, they should wear a mask. You should wear a mask. But if they're not and others aren't sick, there's no need to have a mask out on the street. I think it's also people need to recognize this is a new normal, and that not being on top of other people, particularly in urban areas, is something which may not be natural, but this is the way to prevent the spread of the disease. And as we've been speaking about, to flatten that curve so that the health system doesn't see many patients all coming in at one time and stressing their resources.
And what symptoms or contact with others should prompt someone to call their doctor so that doctors aren't overwhelmed every time somebody gets a common cold symptom? But what do you think hits that level where, okay, now it's time to call your doctor?
Sure. So that's a question I get from many friends and relatives every single day. Should I call the doctor? Should I go to the emergency? What should I do? And these symptoms are similar to the flu symptoms of a cough, a shortness of breath, a fatigue, a fever, obviously, a big issue, sometimes a runny nose, a tightness of your chest. All of those issues are symptoms that you sometimes see with the flu. I think the best way for people to think about this is sometimes a little common cold, they'll feel like I'm just a little under the weather. But if they start to feel more fatigued or if they have a high fever, they definitely should call their health professional and say, give me some advice. That health professional that's caring for them knows their whole story, so may know that this is somebody who is always absolutely healthy and this is atypical, or that person has some underlying medical condition, which means you need to seek attention sooner than somebody else who may say, well, I'll just wait another 24 hours. So that's why it's not ideal for me to give the advice besides a broad strokes on this, because it is better to speak to the person who's caring for you directly.
Understood. And how about pregnant women? Because some of the workforces are telling their employees, even if they're pregnant, they have to report to work. Sometimes in busy office settings.
Right.
If someone is pregnant right now, are they more at risk, less at risk, or the same as other people? Is there complications that could develop with pregnancies?
Right. So that there's two parts to that answer with pregnancy. One is the risk to the baby and the risk to the mom. So the risk to the baby, we don't know. There's nothing right now that suggests that this is transmitted across the placenta, but I haven't seen all the data about that, but that's what I've heard from all that I've read so far from the experts. And there are, I'm sure, many obstetricians and researchers in that field and neonatologists looking at this issue. But I will say, just in general, the you know, the baby is in a very protective environment in many ways, although viruses and things do cross the placenta. So I don't have a definite answer on that part. When it comes to the mom, it also depends on where she is in her pregnancy. And when you get to the end of your second trimester, there's a lot of stress on the body. There's increased blood, the volume of your blood has gone up, the baby's pushing up on the diaphragm, you know, so your breathing is a little harder. Like, if you ask any pregnant woman, she'll tell you that, you know, just they're uncomfortable at that point. They're lying uncomfortably, it's hard to breathe. And so a virus or anything on top of that that causes a stress on the respiratory system is something which is concerning. And so I would strongly urge anyone who's pregnant and starting to have any of these symptoms, call your obstetrician and let them know how you feel, because they, again, may want to intervene a little sooner.
Sure. So the rate of death right now in the United States is hovering at around 1.4%, which is similar to South Korea, which seems to have not only leveled off their cases very impressively, but it's become sort of the benchmark for the world in successfully dealing with this virus. Does that low percentage, at least as it stands today, March 23rd, you know, is that promising? Do you feel good about that?
Well, I think that the percentages have varied in different parts of the world. I actually think the number may drop further because we don't actually know what that denominator is, right? We know who has the cases, but we don't know how many people in the community actually developed COVID-19, got better, never seeked medical attention, or even prior to when we were made aware of this. And if that's the case, then the denominator is even lower, right? Because the denominator is even higher, and the percent of deaths is even lower. So I suspect that will drop as we understand more about this. But it's good to learn from that from other countries as well. But America has an incredible health system, so that also contributes to probably what will be a lower mortality rate in America.
And can you give a few more specifics on the at-risk population? I know a lot of people are concerned about that. They want to know, you know, am I at risk? And I think it might depend on whether they smoke cigarettes or have they taken care of themselves.
Right.
Could you just talk a little bit about that?
Sure, and that's a great point. So the at-risk population is across the spectrum. First of all, usually we're seeing this in older individuals. We're seeing this in the elderly. And the question may be, well, why is that? Well, their immune system is just not as robust as the immune system of somebody who's younger. The individuals who have immunosuppression, whether it's somebody who's on chemotherapy or somebody who had a transplant or somebody who is and are on cyclosporine or other medications, immunosuppressive medications, or somebody who has HIV/AIDS. Now, I'm not saying that means that they're more apt to have a problem, and I've heard stories of all three of those types of patients, all who I've heard about individuals, not firsthand, but from doctors who have told me they had a patient X with Y and got this and got better. So that's an issue that we need to learn more about, but they are more at risk. Overall, they are more at risk, and the elderly population is more at risk. I will add that the point you made is very important. Someone who has smoked their whole life, and let's say they're 40 years old and they've been smoking since 16, and they smoke 3 packs a day, well, their lungs have been challenged for a long period of time. So that's different than the 40-year-old who hasn't, or maybe even the 60-year-old who hasn't. I think we're going to learn a lot more about this virus, how it affects the body over the course of time, and we're just in the beginning phases of this. And I know there are a lot of scientists who are already looking at how the virus works, and I've spoken to, you know, a handful of them over the course of the past week.
And do you think, in that regard, that social distancing, as we've all come to know that term now, and it seems to be being followed out there, is that the new normal through July, even August, do you think? Is that a possibility that through the summer, social distancing would remain in place?
Right. It is sort of a new normal for right now, whether it's 3 months or 6 months or longer. I think it's too early to tell. And the reason I say that is we only have a few points on the curve right now, and it's hard to extrapolate all the way out based on two or three points. And I think as the weeks go by and we better understand this and we have more data even from other parts of the world, it'll be easier to determine where we're headed as a state or as a nation regarding cases and when people will be able to not have to do as much social distancing.
And the drug trials are scheduled to start tomorrow, March 24th, in New York.
Right.
Are you feeling good about the potential for some of these drugs, the malaria drugs, the Zithromax, to work together? And presumably this is not, of course, like a vaccine. Some people might misunderstand that. They're already trying to get it. But it's more to treat someone who is gravely ill with these symptoms of coronavirus, right?
Right, right. So these are experimental approaches. Granted, the two medicines are on the market for other conditions, the chloroquine, the hydrochloroquine for malaria, and Zithromax, which is really a Z-Pak, which people have used for many different reasons. But there are studies which suggest that it may be helpful for those who are quite ill, and the combination may be even more effective. Again, this is all new literature and new data, and our feelings are that if someone is that ill and there's an option to try something that may help, let's do it. I think that obviously this requires monitoring by health professionals, because the combination of those two drugs, actually even one of the drugs, can actually cause a change in your heart rhythm, so you need to monitor. That's one of the reasons that this should be closely watched by health professionals. And it's not like something that can't be managed. It's just something that you need to keep an eye on.
I understand. And I know that each person is different. When they get it, some may be asymptomatic, some may be, you know, on death's door. But for the average person out there who wonders, if I get this, what can I expect? What is the normal course it might run in terms of the severity of the symptoms, how long they last, until a person may even start to turn the corner and feel better?
Right. So I think the answer to that is really that 80% of people will get better very quickly. Well, we'll get better, and it may take a couple of days, but we'll get better without even noticing. They may have no symptoms. They have mild symptoms. Then there's the 20% that may get illness and require more medical attention, whether it's hospitalization, a visit to the doctor, hospitalization, or even the intensive care unit, or even more aggressive treatment in the intensive care unit. And what we're seeing is that's pretty much what's happened. 80% of cases usually get better. For the individual out there wondering, well, what do I do, or what should I be thinking about, I would go back to the way they manage the flu, or they've managed or cared for other individuals in their family or friends who've had the flu. If you feel that you're fatigued or tired, you know, obviously call your doctor, nurse practitioner, whomever cares for you. But also to just monitor their body and sense whether they're getting a fever. They can check that. Everyone sort of knows their own body pretty well and knows when they're feeling just a little under the weather versus this is more of a cold than I've ever had before. And they should tailor their response to that and obviously seek the medical attention. I think the first thing is you pick up the phone, call your doctor and say, here are my symptoms and what do you recommend at that point?
And what advice have you given your family?
So one is, when it comes to my own family, so I have a mom who's in her 80s, and she's home alone. It's very hard. I haven't seen her in weeks now, and I tell her not to go out, and I made sure she had her food and groceries and everything she needs, and I check on her every day. That's number one. I have two little kids, and children, for some reason, fortunately, are not have not been affected by this. There are theories that, you know, I may have as to why, but fortunately that is a positive. And my wife and I, we sort of are nervous a little because we all have seen the spread of this disease, and we try our best, and we try to basically we're social distancing. I was with my family this weekend. Now I'm back up here in Albany, and I was home the whole weekend and didn't see anyone, just my my wife and my two children and the entire weekend. And I think that that's what I would advise others to do. It is a very atypical way of us operating in society. It's just not natural, and I think it makes it very hard for people, and it increases their anxiety, because I believe that the uncertainty of where this is going creates a sense of discomfort in everyone.
Do you think that we'll conquer it?
I actually think that we will definitely conquer it, and I actually think we as a society will be better for it in the end. I think that what will happen from the healthcare system, I think that people will not be so quick to utilize emergency rooms. They will be a little bit more aware of other ways to reach out to the health system. I think the health system will recognize its strengths and other ways to be creative, and I think that will play out in many different ways. I think that the society in general will start to learn a little bit more. We help our neighbors, but maybe even a little bit more helping our neighbors. And I urge people to think about asking about their neighbor. My mom's neighbor actually moved in about, I don't know, maybe a year ago, and they never really spoke, but I was surprised to hear that the other day she checked on my mom to see if she needed anything when she went to the store. And I think that this is the plus. It's seeing the best of people come through, and I think we will get through this. I am 100% confident of that, and I also think that we will end up just understanding things a little bit better. Our priorities may be centered a little bit better than they have been as the years have gone by, and I think the health system will also be better for it.
Well, Dr. Zucker, you're one of the leaders of New York's fight against the coronavirus, and we wish you well, and thank you very much for taking time to talk to the Times Union.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
For additional stories and coverage of the coronavirus pandemic, please visit timesunion.com/capital.
If you're enjoying this podcast, take advantage of all the Times Union has to offer and support our efforts to bring in you award-winning journalism by becoming a Times Union member today. Go to timesunion.com/subscribe.